abused children.
Okay. I'm going to call this meeting of the House Committee on Economic Development to order for Monday, May 6th, 2019. I'm going to open an informational meeting on the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program and Oregon Cannabis Commission. I apologize to those offering testimony today about our late start, but we appreciate your patience in being here. So I'll first call up Andre and Anthony. We're going to talk about the medical marijuana program and the Oregon Cannabis Commission report. So if you come forward, please. Identify yourself for the record. How technology works.
Oh, not that one.
Not this one.
Not that one.
One of the other two.
You don't think they know enough about that?
Well, we have another three today. One. We start with the right one.
Oh. Nope, not that
one. Not that
not
one
that
either.
One either. No. Do you have Andres? No, we got this one last week. It's on OLIS. Do you have it in the original file format, maybe?
1 minute, please.
Meeting materials for Senate Healthcare yet last week.
Well, and it's on ours as well, yes.
Introduce themselves while we're waiting.
Lively members of the committee, for the record, my name is Andre Uso. I'm the administrator for the Center for Health Protection with the Public Health Division of OHA, and I'm also a Cannabis Commission member.
And Chair Lively, members of the committee, my name is Anthony Taylor, and I hold the patient seat on the Oregon Cannabis Commission and serve as its vice chair.
Thank you. I don't think we'll have too many occasions this committee will be this quiet, but.
Can't find it. We're waiting for the presentation to be uploaded. Because
yes.
It's uploaded, I think. Oh, nope, different.
Sometimes they're just high.
See, there's three. Yes, we do have. Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, the OAT presentation is not uploaded. Oh, it's listed as testimony. Should be on or not, but it is, yes.
Okay, I think we're good.
All right.
Chair Lively, members of the committee. I'll give a basic overview of the OMMP program, which some of you are probably familiar with, and then an overview of the commission, its functions and duties, and then we'll talk a little bit about the legislative report that the commission recently submitted. So OMMP, Medical Marijuana Program, has a history dating back to 1998 in the state of Oregon. Provides medical marijuana patient cards to patients with qualifying conditions and the recommendation from a physician that medical marijuana can assist with alleviating any or have therapeutic options for any debilitating conditions that are listed in statute or rule. Really started out as legal protection for medical marijuana patients to legally possess cannabis without a criminal offense. Patients also can designate a caregiver to assist them with administration of cannabis, and they can also designate a grower to produce marijuana for them. And a grower can have up to four patients linked to them, unless they've been grandfathered in, and that's, I can have a few more patients. So it's about a range of $20 to $200 annually to get a card. You have to go to a physician and get a physician's approval. It's not a prescription, but a recommendation on OHA form. And they're required to be a resident of the state of Oregon.
Excuse me, Representative Marsh.
I just have a question.
Do you want to wait till the end, or?
I can take questions whenever you're chair.
Just quickly, I had a question about the number of patients that they're allowed to work for, to grow for. So that, and the number of patients is also linked to the number of plants per patient, right?
Chair Lively, Rep. Mars, that is correct. So it's a one-to-one ratio of a patient to grower. A grower can also grow for three additional patients, and then they have six plants per patient that they can grow.
So you can't, is it possible for a grower who anticipates needing less product to grow for more patients with the same number of plants?
They could do that. So you have a max. If you had one grower with four patients, you can have a total of 24 plants, but you could always have less than 24
okay,
plants.
Okay, thank you.
So some of the benefits of having a card is you have higher possession limits, able to grow more plants. So the average citizen can have four plants in their backyard within the curtilage of their home, obscured from the view of public. A patient could have up to six plants. They can purchase higher potency products. So for example, a normal citizen can walk into an OLCC retail shop and buy a package of edibles up to 50 milligrams of THC, whereas a patient can go in and purchase a 100 milligram package of edibles if they'd like. And they also get tax-free purchases at any OLCC shop. I think the current tax rate is 20% or 17% plus 3% at the local level. So this slide shows you the decline overall in registration since legalization in 2015. So these numbers as are of April of 2019, we've had about a 40% decline in patients and about over 44% decline in growers and 40% decline in grow sites since legalization in 2015 in the state. The graphic showing the decline in patient applications. You can see here we hit a peak in 2015 around legalization, and then we've seen a decline in the past 3 years since then. So the Cannabis Commission, created in 2017 by House Bill 2198 and then codified in 475B, the commission is an advisory capacity, and it's administered by the Oregon Health Authority. Membership includes the state public health officer or her designee, and then eight members appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. They must meet at least quarterly. I think in the past year we've been meeting bi-monthly to get the report out. So what are their primary duties? Well, the primary duty of the commission is to advise on a possible framework for Oregon medical marijuana program. And that would include proper oversight regulation of cardholders, any necessary amendments to laws pertaining to cannabis, and possibly any necessary amendments to OLCC statutes. So the first part of the 475B chapter there. Future role of the commission with respect to that framework. So how do we see ourselves going into the future with respect to medical marijuana? And then any steps that the state should take to ensure that research on cannabis is being conducted for the advancement of public health and for agronomic, horticulture, and medical practices. Additional duties and statute would be to advise generally OHA and OLCC with respect to matters related to the Medical Marijuana Act. And the Adult and Medical Use Cannabis Act as it pertains to patients. We also are tasked with developing a long-term strategic plan to ensure that cannabis remains an option for patients into the future in Oregon, and develop a long-term plan for ensuring cannabis will remain affordable for those patients as well. And then generally, we'd like to keep abreast of federal law, changes in federal laws, regulations, and policies regarding cannabis. The bill that enabled the commission also tasked the commission with developing a legislative report, which we've submitted to the respective committees. When we developed this report, we noted several barriers and areas that we wanted to address. And so we had four priorities areas. So it was a product integrity, so that would include product testing and the diversion issue, research into cannabis, clinical practice and training. So what do providers need to do or need to be aware of when assessing patients to recommend cannabis? And then the issues surrounding patient access and affordability for medical cannabis. So at this point, we have 11 barriers recommendations. I'll summarize those and go through them, and then I'll turn over the latter half of those recommendations over to my colleague, Anthony. First barrier is that related to the governance framework. Currently have multiple state agencies with different mandates, kind of causes some bureaucratic inefficiencies and some confusion in how medical cannabis is regulated in the state. So the first recommendation from the commission would be have some sort of consolidation under a single body for the regulation of cannabis. We didn't really put any specific recommendations on which agency. I think that's kind of the purview of the legislature to determine that. But we did feel that that one agency overlooking all of cannabis would probably be much more efficient than the current state of affairs. Funding. So OMMP, as you saw earlier, we're declining patient base, and the program is solely reliable on patient fees, and about half of those fees are at reduced amounts. So the funding for the program has not been stable since 2015. It's been steadily declining. So the recommendation would be to have a portion of the sales tax, retail sales tax, to secure the program and to help fund some of the recommendations in this report. And then OMMP fees would still be used only for the operation and administration of the program. Product integrity. So the first part of this section is about product testing. Some of you may have heard of issues with cannabis testing going back 2 or 3 years ago and then still persisting into the present. So currently an issue we have is whether potency of products is what it purports to be. We have some variability within laboratories that are testing cannabis products, and advertising the content of THC on a package might not always be accurate. I know the OLCC has recently done an investigation with ODA into some of these potency issues, and we found some results that have shown that they're really not that accurate. So the recommendation here is to have an independent state reference lab to investigate private laboratories and randomly test products to ensure accuracy and consistency in these products going forward. We do have ODA's lab is equipped to test cannabis, but it isn't accredited right now by ORLAP, which is the accrediting body for cannabis laboratories in the state. And we feel that an independent lab, possibly housed within ODA, could help with a lot of the laboratory and testing issues around cannabis. Related to product integrity is the diversion issue related to cannabis. So we've had OSP come and talk to the commission about what they see as far as diversion coming out of the program. And there's a lot unknown. You know, that we don't have exact numbers on how much product is being leaked out of the medical program. So here the recommendation is that we can continue to enroll the applicable growers in the OLCC's cannabis tracking system, and I think that's been going very well recently. And but to continue that mandate and to continue to enhance CTS, and then to support some funding for Oregon State Police, the Liquor Control Commission, and the medical marijuana program to develop enhanced data systems so we really know where the black market or gray market cannabis is originating from and where it's coming from. Right now, OSP doesn't have a database that links into other local or federal databases entirely, so we're not really sure when we do, when the state does seize product that we don't really know where it's coming from all the time, and that information isn't always communicated to local law enforcement jurisdictions, or that information isn't received from federal, local to the state level. Barrier number five. So there's a need for research that expands the science and knowledge related to the health effects of cannabis. I think it was Senate Bill 844, am I getting that right, had a recommendation for research related to cannabis back in 2016.
Yep.
Really no movement because, of course, funding is always an issue with cannabis research, and then there's the federal issue because it's a Schedule I drug that educational institutions are kind of reluctant to get into the cannabis research business at this point in time. So the recommendation would be to establish a cannabis research center. It would entail collaboration with state academic, medical, and government agencies. I think Colorado and California have something of this sort. The one in California is based out of UCLA, and I think the one in Colorado is run by state government in Colorado. You know, like with all actions here, there's a funding ask, and I think the estimate is a minimum of 10 to 12 million over a 4-year period to start the center off and to get research of a high quality going. And then what the research center could do is it could support original research projects on the health effects of cannabis, whether actually they're negative or positive. We're kind of switching focus here a little bit onto the third priority, clinical practice and training. Really, the barrier here is inconsistent assessment, consultation, and management of patients by physicians. So right now, DOs and MDs can provide a recommendation for medical cannabis for a patient. But really, in today's legalized environment, if I have an ailment and I read an article online or in someone's blog, I can just walk into a retail shop and ask someone working at a retail shop, what do they think can provide some therapeutic options for me? And it's really done in a non-scientific way, and in a non-clinical way. So here is the recommendation, and this doesn't really require legislative action, but the agencies can develop or license existing materials to provide more training for cannabis use for patients and for clinical providers in the state, and then require all attending providers here with a CME or continuing education requirement before they actually recommend cannabis to do that training. So they have some rudimentary or basic knowledge about cannabis and its benefits before they start recommending that. For barriers 7 and 8, currently only medical doctors and doctors of osteopathy may provide a recommendation. And this really results in a patient access issue in a lot of areas of the state. People don't have access to a medical doctor or an osteopath. They do see ARNPs, nurse practitioners, or they may see a physician assistant for most of their basic health care needs and evaluations. So here the recommendation would be to revise the statute to allow these other providers to recommend cannabis and to broaden the access for patients. And then also we currently limit patients to have to get a card based upon debilitating conditions that are listed in statute. The OHA has the ability through rule to add additional debilitating conditions. There hasn't been a successful rule petition to have an additional debilitating condition added in the history of the program. So OHA has never added one by rule. We've always relied on the legislature. And the recommendation here is that we just lift these restrictions. We leave it up to the provider to determine with their patient what is best for them as far as cannabis use and if there are any therapeutic reasons. So clinical practice is evolving. The research and clinical practice and the uses of cannabis is evolving. So if really for an agency or for the legislature to legislate what's good for a patient and that conversation between a physician and a doctor, it seems kind of slow to catch up and burdensome. So here it's just, you know, if the patient goes and sees a physician that's been adequately trained, that has experience with dealing with cannabis, then kind of leave it up to the patient and the physician there to determine how they want to use cannabis to treat their conditions. And at this point, I'll turn it over to my colleague, Anthony.
Thank you, Andre. From the report, on patient access summary, the key to the success of OMP has always been facilitation and preservation of the patient and grower relationship. This relationship provides a way for Oregonians unable to grow cannabis themselves to designate someone else to do it for them. Without this compassionate aspect, many patients would not have access to affordable medical cannabis, and low-income patients and patients in residential care or hospice often face additional challenges in identifying a grower, may default to prescription medications with higher health risk profiles. The ability for a patient to designate a grower is essential for the survivor of the program and has provided tens of thousands of patients cannabis at little or no cost, often delivered to their home or care facility. Oregon needs to reevaluate how patients gain access to medical cannabis products in the new landscape of legal cannabis. In fact, we're statutorily required to do so, as my colleague, Mr. Uso, already alluded to. numbers are dropping. As the slide that Andre presented, there's 48% drop. But overall, if you look at, there was originally about 74,000 patients. We're now down to less than, or just over 28,000. That's way over, that's like more than 50% drop right there. So the program is in trouble with respect to that. And finally, for patient, you know, the barrier 9 and 10 talk about how expensive it is for patients to participate in the program, and barrier 10 talks about how expensive it is for growers to participate in the program, and follow the second recommendation of creating an alternative funding source for not just the program, but cannabis, other cannabis programs, projects, and innovations across the state. And finally, the in barrier 11, lack of participation by the OLCC licensees. This has been discussed a great deal in within the commission itself, and really kind of boils down to there's no real lack of affordable medical. In addition to the lack of affordable medical cannabis products in retail shops, some of the oils and more potent extracts are really out of reach for low-income patients. But there's no statewide program providing access to affordable or no-cost medical cannabis patients within the system, and this recommendation really encourages the legislature to reevaluate that, as and in conjunction with the commission to move forward in coming up with a way for the licensees in the existing pathways already established to motivate them to help care for patients. And with that, I'll yield.
So what are the next steps here for the commission? Well, for, you know, after we've submitted this report, it was kind of our first major task. And then right now we want to look at what's the role of a medical marijuana program in a legalized market? I mean, that's the real question. Right now we have a system that's built as an artifact from 1998. It's been built on, revised, amended for 20 years now. But it's always with the point in mind that it started out as a medical program. Well, now we have a completely legalized market, and that dominates the landscape in Oregon. So we need to look at, as a commission, what does medical marijuana look like in a legalized market? What should it look like? You know, is the grower-patient relationship the same today as it was 20 years ago? Does that need to be revised? And the access issues, you know, what does it mean to be a medical marijuana patient when you could possibly go into a retail store in Portland and get what you need, but that's not necessarily the same case if you live in Klamath or out in Eastern Oregon somewhere where they don't have those abilities to access OLCC shops. Also kind of revise the governance framework, as I just talked about, and then work with OMMP to analyze a survey of past and present patients. So we really don't know what patients are actually using. We don't really know what their access issues are. I mean, we have public testimony at our commission meetings, and we do hear from individuals anecdotally, but we haven't had an empirical way of looking at these issues. So getting this survey out would be important to inform the program about, you know, why did people leave the program? Why are people staying in the program? And why do they use the program? So that's the conclusion of our presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Sam, I just have a question regarding, you talked about leakage or the amount of additional product that might, I'm trying to understand. So we know who has the cards, and we know who's, I don't know if this is the correct term, licensed to grow for those cards. So I'm trying to understand. So where's the missing link in there that we wouldn't know? I mean, we restrict how much product they grow. I'm just trying to understand, so where's the missing link about what, not knowing that we have too much product or that it's leaking? I don't get it.
Well, there's two reporting systems for medical growers. If you are growing for three or more patients, then you're obligated to be in OLCC's tracking system. Okay. And it has mechanisms and devices to ensure that it's not just the tracking system, that there are other compliance measures that are involved. And then we have the OMOS system, which is a legislative system that was, or it was a system directed by the legislature to report for smaller grow sites. And it's really a monthly reporting system. It's a it's almost voluntary. I mean, they're compelled to do it, but really, you know, the compliance issues with it. So, you know, once someone tells us, well, we grew this much product and we sent it to this person, we don't really know what happens to it. And then if OSP pulls over a truck heading for the border, really they don't have any legal recourse to figure out, you know, really what the origin of the product was and who it came from or whatnot. And then it's a lot of about the data systems talking to each other. So OSP has information, they do provide it, they do talk to the OMMP compliance folks, but it's rather incomplete. So they're not looking at the whole picture of whether it's black market OMMP or if, even if it's coming out of a retail or an OLCC licensed facility.
Good. Any other questions? Doesn't look it. Thank you very much. So I guess, Anthony, you're staying up, are you?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll call up Stephen Marks and TJ Sheehy. And I will just note for the record, OLCC will be here also on Wednesday. So if we don't get quite done today, we can complete on Wednesday based on the fact that we'll start on time. That's what I'm basing it on today. We'll see. I don't guarantee that.
Stretch.
Okay, welcome. Who's
Thank you again, Chair Lively, and members of the committee. I'm going to go through some of these rather quickly because Andre's always already touched upon them, and I know OLCC will have a couple of slides also. So these slides basically just give you an overview of the basics of the program, how it really works on the ground. 1999, the OMMP begins, 7 plants per patient, 3 mature and 4 immature. 1 ounce possession limit. 2005, would you please? Thank you. 2005, OMMP is updated. We're raised to 6 plants per patient, designated ability to designate caregivers and growers. Possession amount increased to 24 ounces. The Advisory Committee on Medical Marijuana was established by the OHA on the program. 2013, dispensaries and labs created under 3460. 2014, Measure 91 passes. 2015, HB 3400 kicks off adult use regulatory structure. 2016, repeal of residency requirements for licensees and outside money allowed in. 2017, the Oregon Cannabis Commission created, ACMM dissolved. 2019, Oregon has 6.5 million pounds in reserve. The OMMP is really two distinct parts. One is the CARD program where, you know, the OHA takes care of that. They make sure that the patient or their designated caregiver or grower haven't violated the law in the last couple of years. And then there's the designated grower part of the program, which is where a patient can designate a grower to produce cannabis for them. The OHA also has a responsibility, as mentioned before, to manage the OMOS registration reporting system, maintains a confidential registry of patient names and addresses, does until July 1st, does some grow site inspecting, or lab and testing labs is also under OHA, and dispensary and the processor program, which is kind of fallen on hard times. The garden, a patient can grow their own cannabis or designate someone else to do it, but in either case, the patient owns the plants and any product produced from the plants. This was initially put in place to help protect the patient so that they did actually receive from the grower what they were supposed to receive, but it's kind of outlived its usefulness, and I'm sure the commission will address that. And again, patients may designate a non-patient to grow for them, and those growers can grow for up to 8 patients. They may grow, process, and transfer medical marijuana. The permission for growers to transfer has to come from the permission from the patient. And a patient may also designate a primary caregiver and a secondary caregiver. Secondary caregivers are usually licensed healthcare facilities. The patient and their caregiver may jointly possess up to 24 ounces, and then the growers have additional possession limits. Here's the basics of the garden. The statute defines person designate to produce marijuana by a patient, person responsible for a marijuana grow site, the growth site administrator, and finally the caregivers. Person designated to produce is the main person, you know, that a grower or a patient designates, and then the PRMG is any grower that's registered growing for anybody else or themselves. The growth site administrator is the person registered with the OHA. Those people are responsible for growth sites with three or more patients. They're required to report into the OLCC metric system and are responsible for all activity at the growth site. Caregivers, really limited. They're only allowed to grow for a patient at that patient's residence, and they also must register as a grower.
Can I ask?
Yes, Representative Marsh.
Thank you. This is along the lines of my earlier questions, not to you, but to others. So that question about growing for three patients and then you have to start opting into the higher level, is that related to number of patients or is that related to number of plants?
Chair Lively, Representative Marsh, it's related to the number of patients.
Okay.
If you have three or more patients, you're required to report into the metric system. If you have two or less patients and you're a designated grower, you're required to report into the OMOS system. Any designated grower that's not reporting into OLCC must report into the OMOS system on a monthly basis.
So to clarify, you could not then provide for three patients with eight plants without reporting into the other system?
That's correct. Anytime you take on three patients, even if you're growing six plants or 12 plants, three patients kicks you into the OLCC tracking system.
Thank you.
So this is pretty self-explanatory. From 2005 until 2015, a growth site was not limited in the number of patients they could grow for. In fact, they're not really limited now, but with each patient you add to a grow site, of course the grow site is limited typically to 48 plants. But with each patient you add to the grow site, you have to pay the state a $200 grow site registration fee. So you could have 48 plants on at your grow site and be growing for 48 patients, but you'd be paying the state $9,600 a year in grow site registration fees. Every time a growth site added a patient, they could add six more plants, and this is what was called card stacking. And in 2015, we took steps to alleviate that by reducing the plant limit to 48 in most instances. And then in 2017, we took another step and expanded the number of patients you can grow for to eight. That's 48 plants. Prior to that, you could only grow for four patients, 24 plants, and you had to have another grower at the grow site to get to 48 plants. So that kind of killed card stacking. So now, as I said, the growers may grow for as many patients as they like, provided they are registered at the grow site and they don't exceed the plant limit. And gardens may be made up of any combination of patients and growers. Those are the plant limits. 12 plants within residential city limits, you're restricted to 12 plants. You're also restricted to 12 plants if you're growing for yourself on your own property. 48 plants, that's most of the state that's not residential where it's allowed. And then 24 and 96 are the grandfathered amounts for those respective grow sites. So, the OHA oversees all patients and their growers and the remaining dispensaries and processors. The red lines represent the authority, and so the red line from the patient to the OMMP grower, that's the authority, because the patient must designate the grower for that grower to be able to produce for the patient. And the OMMP grower, there's two different kinds, 6 to 12 planters, and then the grow site administrators with three or more patients. So the grower may distribute the green to a patient or caregiver, to an OMHA dispensary or processor, and grow site administrators may submit up to 20 pounds per year to an OLCC wholesaler or processor. The patient themselves may give product to a dispensary or processor. They may also, OHA is processor, and they may also give plant material up to 3 pounds a year to an OLCC processor, and they may also share out with other patients. Finished product, the blue lines,
an OMMP grower can give finished product like cookies and tinctures and things that aren't extracts to their patients. The processors, OLCC processors, and the dispensary processors may also give product to a patient. And that's about it. Are there any questions on this slide?
No, it's very clear.
So to detail a little bit further about the processors, right now an OMMP grower can take product to an OHA processor, and that processor can give product back to the patient or caregiver. And there was a time where they could give it to not an OLCC outlet, but an OHA outlet. The grow site administrators, with their 20-pound transfer into OLCC, those go to processors or wholesalers, so there is a path forward. But ultimately, what Compassionate Oregon would like to see is the ability for the OMMP growers to provide plant material to either processor, and since there's only one OHA processor left, getting it to an OLCC processor, and then that OLCC processor ideally would give it back to an OLCC retail outlet of the patient's choice. Kind of like pharmacies, right? You go to the paid pharmacy of your choice. That would help public safety. It would also give greater access to the extracts for the patients, because right now, as you can see, an OLCC processor is only allowed to give 2 ounces of extract back to a patient, and if a patient's using a gram a day, that's only 2 months worth of medicine. So these are discussions that we're going to continue to have within the commission, and also with my partners at the table here at the OLCC. So I'm going to switch gears for a second. This is how much it costs. I talked briefly about the grow site registrations already. Again, the grow site plant limits. And then reporting. The cannabis tracking system. OMMP growers with 12 plants or less transferring to patients, dispensaries, or processors, and any grow site with 12 plants or less and a designated grower must report into OMOS. OMMP dispensaries, processors, growers with more than 12 plants and 3 or more patients, grow sites transferring in adult use markets, all OLCC licensees, metric seed to sale tracking. And OMMP growers with 12 plants or less, no more than 24 immature, no designated grower, and not transferring are exempt from reporting. Those growers that are reporting into metric have to pay a $480 metric user fee. These are all outlined in the commission report, by the way. And the OMMP growers also are required to have a state certified scale. The one we purchased at our grow site was about $700 with an annual calibration fee of $75. Those growers that are under the grow site administrators and are able to transfer into metric can transfer in 20 pounds per year. They have to meet certain criteria, and under the rules of OLCC, they also have to meet legal water sources. And then finally, the effects of consolidation on the designated grower program population. There's about 670 multiple patient growers right now, 3 or more patients. And the number of those grow sites that manage to get product into the OLCC is 18. We try and consolidate those growers and bring them into OLCC, they're going to be confronted with land use compatibility statements and water rights issues. So we have to be very careful about consolidating these growers into OLCC and try to protect them as much as possible, because those are the people that are providing free and low-cost cannabis to patients that can't provide it for themselves. 3 years ago, that number, instead of 669, was at about 6,043, and they were providing low-cost cannabis to more patients than we have registered in the program right now. So it's been about a 90% reduction in those numbers right there, and it's really important. At least our organization believes that we do everything we can to protect these growers and maintain them to become the base of medical cannabis production, because as Mr. Uso mentioned about potency. Right now, it's true that a consumer is restricted to 50 milligrams per package and a patient 100 milligrams per package. And on the extracts, it's 1,000 milligrams and 4,000 milligrams. But it doesn't matter. They can both buy 90% potency. There's no real definition of medical grade. And what Compassionate Oregon has always supported is that we organize these growers to become those high-grade medical producers. And we end up with some sort of distinction rather than packaging, based on packaging for potency and who really has access to those. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions? So I would, and maybe this will go to OLCC, so I'm trying to understand, and I appreciate the keeping the price down, free, all of that stuff. I'm trying to understand in a grow site, and I've toured several where these large buildings and they're growing a large amount of marijuana. So is it acceptable or possible under our system that that site could also grow medical marijuana as long as it's segregated or separated from the other product?
Chair Lively, yes, there are pathways for that.
Do that.
It was originally called the bump up canopy where the OLCC producers were allowed to increase their canopy size as much as 10%. But given the market these days, nobody's really willing to increase. And so I've had discussions with OLCC, and there's a way that they can segregate a certain square footage of their canopy. But once they do that, 75% of all the product produced in that canopy has to go to patients. So we're hopeful that, you know, we can find that balance here, whether, you know, how to incentivize the licensees to participate in patient care. And some of them have never had to deal with patients. They were never part of the medical marijuana program. And sure. And so they're not as compassionate or sympathetic. And, you know, there's a lot of issues that have to be discussed. How are we going to try and compensate these producers for the product? Are we going to compensate because the facilities are allowed to give it away for free? How are we going to compensate them for their time? And do we, you know, rather than using a stick, how do we motivate them to take advantage of the pathways already set in place by this body? Thank you.
Any other questions? So we have 3 minutes. So if I just carry this over till Wednesday, would that be acceptable to you? We'll start off Wednesday with your part of this and have this discussion.
And they're both back on Wednesday as well.
You're both going to be here. Okay. So, members, that's what we'll do. We'll just carry this informational hearing over to Wednesday and start and finish our discussion at that point. Hopefully, we don't generate a whole bunch of additional questions that we won't have the witnesses here to testify on, but nonetheless. I will close this. Is that right? Informational hearing? Okay, that's all right. And unless there's further business, we'll adjourn.